A handsome, middle-aged woman Arturo hadn't met before was at the desk in Ellery Hudson's outer office when he came in. His injured left arm was in the black silk sling, and his face was pale from the strain of being up and around. He had raised a fuss until the doctors at the hospital discharged him on his own responsibility. He hadn't been able to lie in the bed any longer as he worried about Conrad Browning. True, it had been a little less than 24 hours since Conrad had visited him in the hospital, but most of the day had gone by without a word from his friend and employer, and Arturo had a feeling something was wrong. Conrad would have kept his promise and been by to see him unless something pretty bad had prevented it. The woman at the desk looked up at him.
Yes, sir, may I help you?
Arturo took off his hat and held it politely in front of him.
Yes, I'd like to see Mr. Ellery Hudson, please. My name is Arturo Vincenzo.
I happen to know you don't have an appointment, Mr. Vincenzo. Wait a minute. I know that name. You work for Conrad Browning, don't you?
That's right, madam. Is Mr. Hudson available?
I can check and see.
She got to her feet.
Did Mr. Browning send you?
Actually, I was hoping Mr. Browning had been here and you could tell me that he's all right.
But I haven't seen... Perhaps you should talk to Mr. Hudson.
She hurried through the door behind her, then reappeared a moment later.
Come with me, Mr. Vincenzo.
They went along the hallway to the double doors of Hudson's private office.
Hello, Arturo. What can I do for you? This about Conrad?
That's right. He never came to the hospital today.
Well, I suppose he might be busy.
You don't understand, sir. When he left yesterday, he said he would come by today, and then he never showed up. I don't know how well you know Mr. Browning, but I have always found him to be a man of his word.
Yes, of course. Did you check at the hotel?
That's the first place I went. No one there could recall seeing him all day.
That's odd.
I went up to the suite. Some of the furniture was slightly disarranged, as if someone had bumped into it. And the rug in the sitting room was a bit mussed. I think there was a struggle there.
But you didn't see any blood or anything like that?
No, but I'm still convinced there was some sort of trouble.
What about the palace? Have you talked to Bat Masterson?
No, I came here first.
Masterson was here earlier. He delivered the bank draft for Conrad's winnings in that poker tournament. Then I prevailed upon him to accompany me to the bank so I could deposit it. I doubted that anyone would bother me while I had the famous Bat Masterson with me.
And he didn't say anything about seeing Conrad today?
Not a thing.
Hudson went over to a hat tree and reached for his hat.
Let's go to the palace and see what we can find out. That is, if you feel up to it. It's only been a couple days since you were shot.
I'm fine.
Arturo followed Hudson out of the room to where the woman was sitting behind the desk.
I probably won't be back today, Mrs. Moorhead.
Yes, sir. Is there anything you need me to do?
If you hear anything from Conrad Browning, call the Palace Theater in my home. I'll be at one of those places.
Yes, sir.
They were about to walk up the stairs to the main gambling room of the palace when Masterson saw them and motioned for them to stay where they were. Quickly, he went down the stairs to join them.
Well, Ellery, I didn't expect to see you again so soon. There's not any trouble, is there?
Perhaps you can tell us. Have you seen Conrad today?
Not at all. I left him in the lobby of the Lansing House last night. That's the last time I saw him. You're not afraid something's happened to him, are you?
He promised he would stop by at the hospital today, and he didn't do it.
Well, plans change.
He would have let me know. As Mr. Browning would say, I have a hunch, and that hunch is that something is wrong.
Masterson frowned in thought for a moment before nodding his head.
Let me get my hat. We'll walk over to the Lansing and see what we can find out.
I've already been there. They didn't know anything, but it looked as if there might have been a disturbance in the sitting room of our suite.
No offense, Arturo, but I reckon I've had a mite more experience at getting people to talk than you have.
A few minutes later, the three men reached the Lansing House. Masterson spoke to the clerk, who again denied having seen Conrad that day.
Gather up all your porters and maids and anybody else who was working here last night. I want to talk to them.
For a second, the clerk looked like he might protest, but seemed to think twice about the idea of arguing with Bat Masterson.
Of course, Mr. Masterson. It'll take a few minutes.
While you're doing that, I'm going to take a look at Mr. Browning's suite.
I'm not sure.
It's all right. Mr. Vincenzo has the key.
After Arturo unlocked the door and the three of them stepped into the sitting room, Masterson gestured for his companions to stop where they were.
I want to take a look around without anything else getting disturbed.
It didn't take long for Masterson's keen eyes to study everything in the room. He nodded.
There's been a struggle here, all right. There's a little scratch in the polish on the floor where that writing desk got shoved over hard.
I noticed the same thing. And someone's been kicking and rolling around on that rug.
You're right. It's a good thing the maid didn't come along and straighten the place up before you saw it, Arturo.
That makes it sound as if Conrad has been abducted. Or worse.
Let's stay with abducted for now. No sense in borrowing trouble. Let's go back downstairs and talk to the rest of the staff.
When they reached the lobby, they found the clerk had rounded up 8 more employees. Masterson began questioning them about anything unusual they might have seen the night before. One of the porters, an elderly black man, lifted a hand.
I seen a wagon in the alley behind the hotel, sir. You reckon that could be something?
What sort of wagon?
Just a plain old ranch wagon. Had a pile of blankets tossed in the back.
A lot of things could be hidden under some blankets. Masterson glanced at Arturo and Hudson, and the expressions of all three said they knew that.
What time was this?
Long about 11 o'clock, I'd say.
That was after I left Conrad here. I don't suppose you recognized the man driving the wagon.
No, sir, I'm afraid I didn't. He was just some cowboy. I reckon he works for Mr. McKinney.
McKinney?
Yes, sir. Mr. Rance McKinney. I seen him here at the hotel meeting with important cattle buyers and such. Him and some other fellas on horses left out of here with that wagon I've been telling you about. So the woman.
What woman?
I never did see her face. She's riding up front on the wagon seat, though. Had a coat with a hood on it, and the hood was pulled up, so I couldn't see her face.
Rose Sullivan. It had to be.
And she's in cahoots with McKinney now. Maybe she always was, for all we know.
What are we going to do?
I know the way to McKinney's ranch. I think I need to take a ride out there and have a look around. Are the two of you coming along?
I'm sorry, but I couldn't do any good in a place like that. I'm strictly accustomed to being in the city. My arena is the courtroom.
I understand. And you've got that bum wing.
I don't care. Just try to stop me from coming with you.
I wouldn't think of it.
The kid followed the canyon's twists and turns for more than half a mile. Once he was between its rocky walls, he couldn't hear much from outside, so he didn't know how close the search was getting. He concentrated on forcing his exhausted muscles to work and ignoring the pain in his feet. He spotted a narrow game trail, and the sight caused his heart to leap. Animals always knew where water was. The ordeal he'd been through had left him blistered and parched. The trail led deeper into the canyon, which was the way he wanted to go anyway, so he followed it. A few hundred yards later, he came to a place where brush grew thickly against the canyon's left-hand wall. The game trail angled toward the spot. The vegetation and the trail told the kid what he would find there, so he wasn't surprised when he parted the bushes and saw a small pool of water that lay against the canyon wall where a tiny spring bubbled out of the rock. The stone basin that formed the pool kept the water contained. He knelt carefully beside the pool and stretched out a hand toward the surface that seemed to shimmer, even though the sunlight didn't strike directly on it in the narrow defile. He cupped a handful of water, brought it to his mouth, and let it trickle between his lips. He had never tasted anything so cold and delicious in his entire life. Throwing himself forward, he plunged his head into the pool. The icy shock of the water sent the blood pumping madly through his veins. He opened his mouth and gulped down a long drink. The bracing effect of it made some of his depleted strength return. It wasn't easy, but he pushed himself away from the pool. He knew that if he drank too much, it would make him sick. Shaking the wet hair out of his eyes, he wiped his face and turned around to unwind the rags from his feet. They were glued to his flesh by dried blood. He had to stick his feet into the pool to soak the cloth before he could work it loose. The cold water numbed his feet and brought blessed relief from the pain. He sat there, soaking them for what seemed like a long time. Gradually, he became aware of a soft current against his skin. He leaned forward to study the pool. When he saw how clear the water was, instead of fouled by the blood from his feet, he knew there had to be a crack in the rock that carried it away to some underground stream. It was Eden, the kid thought in his exhausted half-stupor. He had stumbled into paradise. His next thought was about Rance McKinney. Paradise always had to have a serpent in it, and in that case, the low-down snake was McKinney. Lilith the Temptress was there too, in the person of Rose Sullivan. And if Satan was a woman, Pamela Tarleton fit the bill. even dead, her hand stretched out to work its evil in his life. One at a time, the kid pulled his feet out of the pool and examined them. The water had washed away all the dried blood and cleansed the cuts. Walking on them would just start the wounds bleeding again, he supposed. He would stay off them for as long as he could. As he looked around, he noticed something at the edge of the pool, where the brush grew up almost to the water. On hands and knees, he crawled over there and pulled the branches back. The rocky wall of the canyon bulged out, forming an overhang. Under that overhang was a small space, about a dozen feet long and 3 or 4 feet deep. Anybody riding by would never see it, the kid thought. It would make a good hiding place. He hadn't gone up the canyon intending to hide. He had been looking for a place where he could ambush one of the searchers. But fate and that game trail had led him there. As tired and beat up as he was, he might not be able to whip a newborn kitten, let alone some tough-as-nails hard case. He needed rest, no two ways about it. He could see all of the cave-like area, but he broke a branch off one of the bushes and raked it back and forth inside the opening anyway, just in case a rattler had crawled in there to escape the heat of the day. When nothing buzzed ominously at the poking stick, he figured it was safe. The kid took another long drink from the pool, then crawled under the overhang. Letting the branches he had pushed aside spring back into place, it was soon cool and shady in there, and he felt himself falling asleep right away. He didn't try to stay awake. He let himself go, and within a few breaths, he was dead to the world. It was the middle of the afternoon before Arturo and Bat Masterson reached Rance McKinney's ranch. They had taken Arturo's buckboard, with Masterson handling the reins since Arturo's arm was injured. As the former lawman hauled the team to a halt in front of the sprawling ranch house, an elderly hostler came out of the nearby barn and stared at them in surprise.
Lord have mercy! You're Bat Masterson!
That's right. I'm looking for your boss. Is Rance here?
Nope. Afraid not.
When do you expect him back?
I couldn't say. Him and the crew are out taking care of a chore.
Masterson and Arturo exchanged a glance.
What sort of chore?
You reckon they tell me anything about what's going on around here? I'm just a stove-up old waddy who can't make a real hand no more. Ain't fitting for nothing but carrying water and mucking out stalls.
What about Miss Sullivan? Is she here?
That gal who come in with the boss last night? Ain't seen hide nor hair of her today. A lady like that, you wouldn't expect her to hang around with a worthless old bum like me.
McKinney got back from Denver last night, you said.
Yep, mighty late, too. I had to get up out of a warm bed to handle the horses and that wagon team. Didn't care for it much, neither.
Did he have any strangers with him except the woman?
Suddenly, a cagey look appeared in the old-timer's roomy eyes. He realized he was running off at the mouth too much.
I don't know nothing. I just take care of the horses.
He stopped in surprise when Masterson, in the blink of an eye, produced a gun from under his coat.
You know who I am. You know it's not a good idea to lie to me, amigo.
I never lied.
I don't believe you. McKinney brought someone back from Denver with him, didn't he? Someone besides the woman.
Perhaps wrapped up in some blankets in the back of the wagon you mentioned.
Tell me, are you fellas trying to get me killed? I can't go around blabbing about the boss's business. Rance McKinney ain't what you'd call a forgiving man.
Tell us something we don't know. Better yet, tell us the truth.
The barrel of the gun in his hand lifted a little to emphasize the command.
All right. Take it easy, Mr. Masterson. Ain't no need for you to go shooting up the place. There was a fella in the back of the wagon, all right. And when some of the boys went to drag him out, there was a ruckus. I was in the barn, so I didn't see it all too good. It didn't last too long.
Was anybody hurt?
I don't know. There were no shooting, I can tell you that much. I think they got the fella in the house somehow. That's all I know.
Did you see him again today?
Nope. But I've been staying in the barn most of the time, minding my own business. Figured the way things were going around here is a good idea.
Where is everybody now?
The boss and the rest of the crew rode out around the middle of the day. They ain't come back yet.
Which way did they go?
The old man pointed toward the foothills and the mountains beyond them.
West.
Masterson looked at the old-timer again.
There's no reason for you to tell anybody we were here.
Oh, sure, Mr. Masterson. Whatever you say.
Masterson got the team moving again and turned the buckboard toward the rugged hills.
Do you think he was telling the truth about not telling anyone we've been here?
I doubt it, but I've got a hunch this may be all over before it'll matter.
What about Miss Sullivan? She may have seen us.
I can't picture her getting on a horse and riding out to warn McKinney that we're coming. Can you?
I don't know. Based on what has happened so far, I'm not so sure what Miss Sullivan wouldn't do.
Bat Masterson was naturally skilled as a tracker, which had come in handy during his career as a buffalo hunter, army scout, and lawman. But even someone as inexperienced in the ways of the frontier as Arturo could see the tracks left behind by the large group of men who had ridden into the hills ahead of them.
That has to be McKinney and his bunch. Nobody else would be out here on the Double Star.
We are.
Yeah, but there's only two of us.
Which means, judging by the looks of these tracks, that we are considerably outnumbered.
We have the element of surprise on our side.
I hope that's enough. What do you think McKinney is doing?
Well, I've been pondering that. McKinney loves to gamble, we know that. If he and Miss Sullivan kidnapped Conrad, they must want him dead. But I can see McKinney deciding it would be more fun if he gave him a sporting chance.
You mean some sort of duel? Why bring him all the way out here to do that?
No, not a duel. That would be too close to an even break.
It wouldn't be even at all. I've seen Conrad draw and fire a gun. There aren't many men faster than him, I'm sure.
You are talking to a man who has a certain reputation as a pistolier, you know.
I meant no offense, Mr. Masterson, I assure you. But Conrad seems to have inherited a great deal of his father's skill with firearms.
And there are none better than Frank Morgan. All right, I'll grant you that. But like I was saying, even if he's willing to gamble a little, McKinney will want to stack the deck. Instead of a face-to-face showdown, I was thinking more along the lines of a hunting party.
A hunting party?
Yeah. Turn Conrad loose on foot and unarmed. Give him a head start, and then McKinney and his men will go after him and hunt him down like a wild animal.
But that's barbaric.
Barbarism is the natural state of mankind.
Shouldn't we aspire to more than that?
Sure. But in the long run, nothing human beings can do surprises me all that much. That's one of the things years as a lawman taught me.
I suppose you're right. What are we going to do?
Try to find Conrad first. Then we'll give him a hand and get him out of here. You fire a gun?
I'm actually a decent shot with a rifle. And since I started traveling with Mr. Browning, I've been involved in several altercations that involved gunplay. But I can't use a rifle with this, bum wing of mine, as you called it. I can shoot a pistol, but I'm not sure how accurate I'll be with one.
Just make sure it's not pointed toward me or Conrad when you pull the trigger, and you'll do all right. You can make McKinney's men duck anyway, but maybe it won't come to that.
Arturo seriously doubted that. Whenever Conrad was involved, sooner or later things always seemed to involve gunplay. The buckboard entered the hills. So far, they hadn't seen the rancher or any of his men, but the tracks continued to lead in that direction. Masterson cast a worried glance toward the sky.
Sun's getting lower. There are only a couple of hours of light left. I can steer by the stars and find our way back out of here after it gets dark, but we won't have much luck looking for Conrad if we don't find him before then.
We can't give up. Not if there's a chance we can help him.
Nobody said anything about giving up.
Masterson hauled back on the reins and brought the buckboard to a gradual halt.
But that's interesting.
He nodded toward a line of cliffs that rose in front of them.
What's interesting? I don't understand.
See those cliffs? The tracks lead right toward them, but the cliffs run north and south for a long way. From here, there doesn't appear to be any way horses could get up there.
So why did McKinney and his men ride towards them? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm getting at, all right. It doesn't make sense. Unless they plan to use those cliffs to help them in their hunt.
Well, they could drive Conrad up against them so he wouldn't have any way to escape.
Exactly. Like cornering a wild animal.
But where are they? We can see all the way to the cliffs. No one's out here.
Masterson lifted his gaze to the higher ground beyond the cliffs.
Maybe they're up there. Maybe Conrad found a way to get to the top after all, and they had to go around to chase him.
I trust your instincts, Mr. Masterson. What are we going to do?
Let's get closer. Maybe the tracks will tell us what happened.
That turned out to be the case. The tracks led almost all the way to the base of the cliff, and from there they went north.
He made it up there.
Masterson pointed at the rope Conrad had made from his shirt that was now lying at the bottom of the cliff.
I'd bet my old derby hat on it. Come on.
He swung the buckboard along the trail left by the riders.
We're going to follow them.
Masterson flicked the reins and got the team moving at a faster pace.
That's right. McKinney's going to lead us right to Conrad. And when we find them, well, then I reckon we'll probably see that showdown you were talking about earlier, Arturo.
The kid had no idea how long he had slept. All he knew for sure when he pried his eyes open was that the light had changed. It was dimmer. Not night yet, certainly, but probably late in the afternoon. He didn't know what had woken him. Then he heard the deliberate hoofbeats of a horse somewhere close by. Carefully, the kid slid closer to the opening. The hoofbeats were louder, sounding like the horse was almost on top of him. He moved one of the branches aside a fraction of an inch to peer out. A man rode through the circle of brush surrounding the pool. He reined in and looked down at the stone basin. For a second, the kid couldn't remember what he'd done with those bloody rags he'd soaked off his feet. If he had left them where the man could see them, it would be a dead giveaway that he'd been there. His pulse slowed as he recalled he had balled up the rags and shoved them under a rock. The man might find them if he bothered to search, but he didn't have any real reason to look for them. The man dismounted and let his horse drink from the pool. He knelt beside the water himself and used his cupped hands to get a drink. The kid could see the man's profile, an angular, black stubbled jaw, but that was all. Water dripped off the man's sharp, pointed chin. He turned his head slightly, and the kid saw that his left eye tended to wander. He was one of the guards who had pointed a shotgun at him that morning in the Double Star Ranch House. Judging by the slow, deliberate way the man had been riding, he had come up the canyon looking for something. Or somebody. Namely, Conrad Browning. It was the hombre's bad luck that he had found Kid Morgan instead. The man took off his black hat, sleeved water from his face, then turned his head toward his horse.
I don't think that bastard's up here. Been looking all afternoon, ain't found hiding or hair of him. He must have fallen in a ravine or something. Oh, you think so too, do you? Well, I reckon we'll keep looking anyway. Leastways until it gets too dark to see anything. I could sure as hell use that $1,000 bounty. Mosey on down to Mexico, that's what I'd do. Find me some little brown skin honey to tend to my every need. Yes, sir, my every need.
The kid exploded out of the brush at the edge of the pool and slammed into the man's back, driving him forward. He didn't have a chance to do anything before he landed face first in the pool with the kid on top of him. He had opened his mouth to let out a yell, but that was a mistake. The icy water rushed into his throat. The kid looped his left arm around the man's neck and wrapped his legs around the man's torso. He planted his right hand on the back of the man's head and forced it deeper under the water. Shoving so hard, he felt the impact shiver up his arm as the man's face smashed into the rocky bottom of the pool. The man bucked and heaved and splashed, but pinned down the way he was, he couldn't throw off the kid. The man's struggles weakened. The kid held him down, waiting for the water to finish him off. Briefly, it felt almost the same as cold-blooded murder. Normally, killing a man like that bothered the kid. But the feeling was mitigated by the certainty the man would have killed him without blinking an eye. He thought only about the bounty he was going to collect from his employer, Rance McKinney. The kid wasn't going to lose any sleep over the hard case's death. The man had gone completely limp. The kid held his head under the water for another couple minutes just to be sure he was dead, then let go of him. The pool was too shallow for the corpse to float. It just lay there, head and shoulders resting on the bottom. The kid took hold of the man's legs, hauled him out of the water, and rolled him onto his back. The blood in the water had come from the man's broken nose, which had been pushed down almost flat when the kid hammered it against the stone bottom of the pool. He hoped that none of McKinney's other men were close enough to have heard the splashing. At least the man hadn't had a chance to yell before his horse had backed off, spooked by the commotion. The kid approached the horse. The animal allowed him to take hold of the reins. He tied them to one of the bushes and felt better now that he knew the horse wasn't as likely to run off. The light in the canyon had dimmed even more as he turned back to the dead man and started stripping his clothes from him. A glance at the rosy sky told the kid that the sun was setting. Night would fall soon. The dead hard case had been about the same height as the kid, but 20 or 30 pounds lighter. He was able to get into the denim trousers and the faded red shirt the man had worn, but the clothes were tight on him. He didn't bother with the black vest. The man's gun belt and boots were more important. The gun belt buckled all right around the kid's hips. He pulled the Colt 44 from the holster and checked it. The revolver was in good shape, which came as no surprise. A killer's main tool was his gun, so naturally he took care of it. The kid pouched the iron and picked up one of the boots. The dead man had been a little skinny, but that didn't affect the size of his feet. The boots were plenty big enough for the kid. Maybe too big, in fact. But he used the knife he found in the man's saddlebags to cut up the ripped and ragged trousers he'd been wearing earlier, pulled the man's socks on, then padded his feet thickly with the strips of cloth before he pulled on the boots. When he stood up to check how they felt, he found his feet didn't hurt all that much. He would be able to get around without being too hampered by his injuries. The kid hung the man's hat on the saddle horn and looked through the saddlebags. He found a couple of dry biscuits wrapped up in some cloth and had to force himself not to cram them into his mouth. He could eat later. There was extra ammunition that would fit the revolver and the Winchester rifle in a sheath strapped to the saddle. Now that he was armed again, the kid felt a lot better. He had a grim chore still to do, though. He bent and grasped the dead man, dragging him over to the hidden space where the kid had slept away the afternoon. He managed to shove the corpse under the overhang where it might not ever be found.
Sorry, mister. I don't have a shovel or the will to bury you properly. It's just too damn bad you threw in with McKinney.
With that out of the way, he went back to the horse and settled the black hat on his head. From a distance, he figured he could pass for the dead man, especially in the fading light. His hope, though, was that none of McKinney's other men were in that canyon. If they had spread out to search for him, it was possible. He untied the mount and led it out of the brush. Before he swung up into the saddle, the kid stood for long moments, listening intently. He didn't hear any other horses moving around or men calling to each other. The rugged landscape around him was quiet. He mounted and turned the horse west, away from Double Star headquarters. Maybe there was nobody close by at the moment, but there were other men in the gathering shadows who wanted him dead. Too many for him to risk trying to get back to the Double Star while it was still light. He stood too great a chance of riding right into trouble. He needed to find another hiding place, somewhere he could eat the meager supper he'd found in the dead man's saddlebags and rest some more. After that, he intended to head for the ranch headquarters. McKinney wouldn't expect him to try anything like that. The kid knew if he could get his hands on the rancher, McKinney's men would have to think twice about coming after him with guns blazing. Such a daring ploy would be easier once darkness had fallen completely. Later in the night would be soon enough for the killing to start again, he decided. The kid rode up the canyon as gloom settled around him. Masterson drove the buckboard along the cliffs as the sun continued to sink lower. Long shadows from the mountains covered the landscape as the vehicle moved along at a fast clip. Arturo lifted his good arm and put his hand on his hat to hold it on as he bounced a little on the seat.
Sorry, the ride is pretty rough.
Don't concern yourself with that, Mr. Masterson. We can't afford to waste any time.
That's what I thought.
After a while, they came to a trail that zigzagged its way to the top of the cliff, following a narrow ledge. Masterson brought the buckboard to a stop and stared at the trail.
There's no way we can get this buckboard up there. The trail's plenty wide enough for a man on horseback, but not a wagon.
Then what are we going to do?
I suppose we could unhitch the team and we could ride up bareback. Or we can walk it. But when we got to the top, we wouldn't have any horses.
I can try to ride bareback.
Masterson was about to say something else, but a sudden rattle of rocks above them made him stop short. He tilted his head back to look up.
Somebody's up there, and it sounds like they're on their way down. Let's get over in those trees until we find out who it is.
Masterson sent the buckboard rolling swiftly toward a stand of pines about 50 yards along the cliff from the spot where the trail began. Whoever was at the top of the cliffs might hear the hoofbeats from the team and the creaking of the wheels, but that couldn't be helped. Arturo hoped that the sounds of the rider's own descent would cover up the other noises. When they had circled the trees and were out of sight of the trail, Masterson brought the buckboard to a stop. He drew his pistol and pressed it into Arturo's hand.
Follow my lead. Don't start shooting unless I do.
Rest assured that I won't, Mr. Masterson.
Masterson hopped down easily from the buckboard and picked up the Winchester he had placed in the back of the vehicle. He worked the rifle's lever, throwing a cartridge into the firing chamber.
Come on.
Arturo climbed down awkwardly on the other side of the buckboard.
Stick close to me.
The two men moved swiftly but quietly into the trees, working their way toward a spot where they could watch the trail. Masterson pointed at one of the pines and motioned for Arturo to take cover behind its thick trunk. He darted behind another tree. Arturo edged his head out just enough to see what was going on. A couple of men on horseback reached the bottom of the trail and rode out a few yards from the base of the cliff before reining in. Arturo recognized the distinctive cowhide vest that Ranch McKinney usually wore. The man with McKinney was one of the rancher's hired gunmen. He pointed to the ground.
See, boss, I told you I heard something. Those are wagon tracks.
They damn sure are. Who'd be out here following us?
McKinney reached for the stock of the rifle that stuck up from his saddle boot.
You better find out.
That's our cue.
Masterson stepped out from behind the tree and leveled his Winchester at the rancher.
Keep your hand away from that rifle, McKinney, or I'll drill you.
McKinney froze with his hand still a few inches away from the rifle.
Masterson? What the hell?
Better warn that gun wolf of yours not to try anything either. If he does, you'll be dead before you hit the ground.
Take it easy, Bob.
Arturo stepped forward and pointed the pistol at McKinney.
Where's Conrad Browning?
Is that what this is about? You're looking for Browning? I don't have any idea where he is, but I'll have the law on you for coming on my range and threatening me. You can't get away with this, Masterson, even if you are famous.
That's not going to work. We know you and Rose Sullivan and some of your men kidnapped Conrad from the Lansing house last night. You brought him out here to hunt him down like some sort of wild animal because he beat you at cards, or because Pamela Tarleton filled your head with some sort of nonsense about him. Maybe both, with the fact that you're a low-down son of a bitch thrown in on top of it. But you'd better call it off, Rance, or you're the one who's going to wind up dead.
Boss, maybe we better...
Shut up!
Masterson's just guessing. He don't have any proof of anything.
I'll get it, though. Until then, you're coming back to the Double Star with me and Arturo. Get down off that horse and come over here.
Go to hell! You want to shoot me, Bat Masterson? You go right ahead.
Something about McKinney's angry bellow sounded odd to Arturo, and with a flash of insight, he realized what it was.
He's trying to warn someone! There must be...
Guns began to roar above them. Masterson fired, but McKinney had already kicked his feet free of the stirrup and dived out of the saddle as the slug from the former lawman's rifle sizzled through the space where he had been a fraction of a second earlier. McKinney hit the ground and rolled. Arturo jerked his gun up and saw that several of McKinney's men had crept down the trail on foot and opened fire when they were about halfway down the cliff. Arturo pointed the pistol at them and started pulling the trigger. The gun roared and bucked in his hand. He had no idea if his shots were landing anywhere near McKinney's men, but he kept firing anyway. Masterson staggered and dropped his rifle. Arturo glanced over at him, afraid Masterson had been mortally wounded. He clutched his right forearm.
It's just a scratch, but they've got us outgunned.
The hammer of the pistol in Arturo's hand clicked on an empty chamber.
Hold your fire!
McKinney was on his feet again with a revolver in his hand.
Hold your fire!
He pointed the gun at the two men by the trees.
How about it, Masterson? You give up, or do we shoot you and your friend to pieces?
The law won't let you get away with murder.
Murder? You two came out here on my range and started shooting at me and my men. Sounds like self-defense to me. What's it gonna be?
All right, you've got us. Now, what are you going to do with us?
An ugly grin stretched across McKinney's face in the fading light.
Things haven't quite worked out today the way I planned. You've given me a new idea. Instead of me hunting down Browning, I'm gonna make him come to me. You two bastards will be the bait in the trap.
The shadows were thick in the little side canyon where the kid had stopped to rest. He could see only a narrow slice of sky from where he was, but it had faded from blue to purple and back to a deeper blue that would soon be black. Pinpricks of light were beginning to appear as the stars came out. He had eaten the two dry biscuits and stretched out on the ground for a while to rest. He didn't allow himself to go back to sleep because he wanted to head for the Double Star Ranch House as soon as it was good and dark. He lay there on his back, looking at the stars and thinking. Maybe it would be best to circle around McKinney's headquarters and head for Denver instead. McKinney had already revealed everything he knew about the children. They weren't there. Pamela had taken them with her when she left for San Francisco. So why even bother trying to settle the score with McKinney? Because it wasn't a good idea to leave an enemy who wanted his blood behind him, the kid decided. McKinney might follow him and try again to kill him. Besides, a man didn't run from trouble. He faced it head on and conquered it. That was the example Frank Morgan had set for him, and the kid intended to follow it. He sat up sharply. Somebody was coming. The kid sprang to his feet and moved swiftly to the horse's side. He closed his hand over the animal's muzzle to keep the horse from making any noise. He could hear hoofbeats as the rider moved slowly and deliberately past the mouth of the side canyon where it opened into the main canyon about 20 yards away. Another of McKinney's men, the kid thought, searching for him in the darkness. Maybe even McKinney himself, although the kid thought it more likely that the rancher would have returned to the Double Star already. The rider missed the little side canyon and moved on past it. The kid knew he could take the man by surprise and whittle down the odds a little more. Leaving his horse where it was, he cat-footed along the canyon wall. As he approached the opening, he slid the gun from its holster on his hip. Silently, he rounded an outcropping of rock at the mouth of the canyon and leveled the revolver at the rider's back. Only, there wasn't any rider. Even by starlight, the kid's keen eyes could see that the horse's saddle was empty. That sight set off alarm bells in his brain. The searcher must have spotted the side canyon after all and sent his riderless horse on ahead to draw the kid out into the open. He whirled and dropped into a crouch. He felt the wind rip of a bullet as it whipped past his ear. He spotted the muzzle flash from the corner of his eye and sent a slug of his own in that direction. He heard that his aim was true and pulled the trigger again. He'd already fired before he realized there was something different about the cry he'd heard. It had been higher pitched than he expected. His finger was taut on the trigger, but he didn't fire a third shot. He moved quickly and silently to one side, just in case his assailant got off another round. A figure pitched forward out of the shadows. A gun fell to the ground as the person fell. Shock went through the kid as he saw the fair hair that spilled around the figure's head. He kept the motionless bushwhacker covered as he approached carefully. When he came to the fallen gun, he kicked it aside, farther out of reach. There was no doubt about it. Even in man's clothes, the shape on the ground belonged to a woman, Rose Sullivan. He had wounded her, but she was still alive. Kneeling beside her, he grasped her shoulder and rolled her onto her back. His hand flashed out, grabbed her wrist, and shoved her arm aside just as the derringer she thrust toward him cracked wickedly. He twisted her wrist and forced her to drop the little gun. He used the barrel of the Colt in his other hand to bat it aside. He let go of her, stepped back quickly, and pointed his gun at her again.
How bad are you hit, Rose? You better tell me, otherwise I'll just let you lie there and bleed to death.
You son of a bitch! You put a bullet in my side!
Stand up. I'll have to see some blood before I believe you.
Damn you!
Rose struggled to her feet. A dark stain spread on the shirt she wore.
Now, are you satisfied?
He backed into the side canyon, keeping her covered as he did so. He didn't know if any of McKinney's men were still in the vicinity. If they were, they were bound to have heard those shots.
Come on, but don't try anything else.
Or what? You'll kill me? Conrad Browning isn't gonna murder a woman.
You wanna bet your life on that?
She heard something in his voice that told her how close she was to death. She followed him as he backed into the canyon. He circled around and wound up behind her, still covering her with the Colt.
All right, let's take a look at that wound.
You want me to take my shirt off, is that it, Conrad?
He flipped the gun around in his hand, raised it, and brought the butt chopping down against the back of her head. He didn't hit her very hard, and her thick hair cushioned the blow, but it was enough to send her to her knees, stunned. He holstered the Colt, grabbed her arms, jerked them behind her back, and knocked her down. He straddled her hips with his knees, pinning her to the ground, and held her wrists with one hand while he used the other to pull her shirt up. His bullet had scraped a narrow furrow along her side instead of penetrating her body.
You'll live. That's more than you deserve. I'm surprised McKinney let you come out here with him.
McKinney doesn't know a thing about it. He's a damned fool. He should have just put a bullet in your brain and buried your body where nobody would ever find it.
That's what you would have done, right?
That's right. I was paid to kill you.
And you take pride in a job well done.
The kid let go of her and surged back to his feet, moving away from her as he kept her covered again.
You could sit up and tear some strips off your shirt to use as bandages. Or you can let that wound keep bleeding. It doesn't matter to me.
You're a cold-blooded bastard, aren't you? Oh.
Rose sat up.
You get that way when people steal your children and keep trying to kill you.
Rose started tending to the bullet crease as best she could.
What are you gonna do now?
Are McKinney and his men still out here looking for me?
Some of them are. McKinney and one of the men were headed back to the cliffs, the last I saw of them. They think they're such hard cases. They never even knew a woman followed them out there and kept looking after they gave up. I found this little canyon, and my instincts told me you might be holed up in it.
Pretty smart. So was that trick with the horse. You just weren't quite quick enough to take advantage of it.
Next time.
If I kill you, there won't be a next time.
She didn't say anything.
But I think I can get better use out of you than that.
As a hostage? McKinney doesn't care whether I live or die.
But he might care what you can tell the law about him and his little sport. He might want you back just to keep you from talking.
That would mean he'd rather see me dead.
Well, either way, it's a distraction, isn't it? Now clean yourself up.
Once Rose was done bandaging herself up, the kid stepped forward.
On your feet. We're going to see how far off your horse strayed.
You're going after McKinney tonight?
No reason to wait. With it being dark, maybe he won't see me coming.
He's gonna kill you, you know.
He's been trying to. And I'm still here, aren't I?
You're as crazy as he is.
Maybe. Let's go.
The horse Rose had taken from the Double Star hadn't gone very far. They found it less than 100 yards away in the main canyon, cropping contentedly at the grass. The kid led the animal back to the side canyon. He wasn't going to let Rose mount up until he was on the horse he had taken from the dead gunman. A few minutes later, they were riding east toward the edge of the foothills. He knew there was a chance they could run into some of McKinney's men who were still searching for him. If that happened, he would just have to fight his way through them and keep an eye on Rose at the same time. It would be quite a challenge. As they rode, the kid indulged his curiosity.
How in the world did a woman wind up being a hired killer?
You think women can't kill?
They don't usually get blood on their own hands. They prefer to have some man do their killing for them.
Some women are like that. But I always like to handle my own problems. I started at a pretty early age.
Killing, you mean?
Realizing that some men deserve to die. And there it didn't take me long to figure out that it could be profitable, too. Men are fools. A pretty face and a sweet smile is all it takes to make them believe whatever you want them to believe.
Even though he didn't know the details of Rose's background, he had a hunch it was somewhat similar to that of his friend Lace McCall. She had had a bad time of it as a youngster and had developed a tough hide and considerable skill with a gun. But she was a bounty hunter and used her talents on the side of the law, at least to a certain extent. She wasn't a cold-blooded killer like Rose. He might have tried to find out more from her, but just then he noticed an orange glow in the sky up ahead. As he frowned, puzzled by the sight, he smelled smoke. Something was burning.
Come on.
A short time later, they reached the cliffs the kid had climbed earlier in the day. He moved close enough to the edge that he could look down and see a vehicle burning below. The flames had subsided a little, so he got a good look at the charred framework of what appeared to be a buckboard. If he didn't know better, the kid thought, he would have taken it for the buckboard that Arturo had driven all the way across the Great Plains from Kansas City. A cold finger traced an icy trail along his backbone. That was Arturo's buckboard, he realized.
Let's get down there. You know where the trail is. Show me.
What if I don't?
The kid turned in the saddle. The Colt sprang into his hand.
You can cooperate, or I'll tie you up and leave you here.
All right. Follow me.
She rode north. The kid trailed behind her with his gun still drawn. After they had gone a mile or so, they came to a ledge that worked its way down the face of the cliff. She continued to lead the way, with the kid covering her as they descended. They galloped to the burning buckboard. The fire was almost out, but the blackened wood still glowed cherry red in a few places. The team was gone, obviously unhitched and led away before the vehicle was set ablaze. The kid spotted something white flapping in the breeze a few yards away. It was a piece of paper weighted down by a rock. He dismounted, keeping his gun pointed toward Rose. Stooping quickly, he pulled the paper free. The moon was rising, but there wasn't enough light for him to read the words written on the paper. He holstered the Colt and reached into the shirt pocket where the dead gunman had kept his makings. A moment later, a match flared as the kid snapped it to life with his thumbnail. The glare from the match revealed the words scrawled on the paper. I have Masterson and the Italian. Come to Double Star at dawn, or they die. The coldness he had felt earlier crept through his veins. The note wasn't signed, but obviously the message was from Rance McKinney. Arturo and Bat Masterson were the rancher's prisoners. The kid wasn't sure what they had been doing out there, looking for him more than likely, but that didn't matter. Their lives were in danger, and he was the only one who could save them.
What is it?
The kid crumpled the paper and threw it aside.
McKinney has my friends.
The kid told her about the demand that he come to the ranch headquarters at dawn.
Huh. I guess it's a good thing you have me then. Maybe you can trade me for them. In a case like that, McKinney might decide he wants me alive after all.
The hell with that.
The kid drew his gun and lined the sights on Rose.
I'm not waiting that long.
Arturo's arm hurt like blazes. McKinney's men had pulled it out of the sling and yanked it behind his back so they could tie his wrist together. Then they had tied him into the chair where he sat in the big parlor of the ranch house. Masterson was beside him, similarly trussed up.
McKinney is going to kill us, you know.
Arturo hoped talking would get his mind off the slow, warm trickle of blood he felt, making its way down his arm from the reopened wound.
Oh, sure. He can't afford to let us loose. I don't believe in false modesty. I'm much too famous for him to get away with kidnapping us like this. It'll be better for him if we just disappear. But there's still one thing we have to remember.
Mr. Browning is still out there somewhere.
Exactly.
You two shut up that muttering over there. I don't know what you're saying, but you're starting to get on my nerves.
We were just talking about how all of you who survive are going to wind up dancing at the end of a rope. I hope you've enjoyed the wages McKinney has paid you so far, because you won't live to collect any more.
The man pointed the rifle at the former lawman.
Why didn't I just go ahead and shoot you? The famous Bat Masterson. You ain't so high and mighty now, are you?
McKinney wouldn't like that. He wants us kept alive. For now.
For now is right. You two are dead ducks. You just don't know it yet.
Oh, on the contrary. I believe we are well aware of it.
Well, shut your traps or I'll shut them for you. The boss may want you alive, but he didn't say nothing about how I couldn't take a rifle butt to you and bust your jaws.
You have a point, amigo.
Masterson looked over at Arturo and shrugged. They didn't know where McKinney was. Maybe still looking for Rose Sullivan. The rancher had been upset when they got back and discovered that she was gone. It was impossible for Conrad to have taken her, Arturo knew. So that meant she had left on her own. From the way McKinney had gone raging around, he'd had some plans of his own for the beautiful killer. The guard turned his rifle toward the door as it burst open, but he lowered the weapon as another of McKinney's men hurried in.
Where's the boss? Upstairs, I think. Damn it, Carter, I came near to plugging you. What's so all fire important?
There's a horse coming in with somebody tied across the saddle. I think it's that girl, and she looks dead.
Son of a bitch!
The guard turned toward the stairs.
Boss! Mr. McKinney!
A moment later, McKinney appeared at the top of the stairs.
What the hell is it?
The boys found that Sullivan woman. Something's happened to her.
McKinney came clattering down the stairs in a hurry, gun in hand.
Show me.
All three of them went outside, leaving the front door open. Masterson looked over at Arturo.
Conrad wouldn't have killed her, would he?
Only if she was trying to kill him.
Suddenly, someone appeared behind Arturo and Masterson.
Just sit still, Arturo. I'll have you and Bat loose in a minute.
Before Arturo could even gasp in surprise, all hell broke loose outside. The kid got the knife under Arturo's bonds and severed them with one swift, strong stroke. Then he moved over and cut Masterson free as well. The explosion from the barn hadn't taken him by surprise, as it had McKinney and the other men in the yard between the house and the barn. He had known just about how long it would take for the fuse to burn down and had been expecting the blast. Finding that crate of dynamite in the barn had been good luck. He'd planned to fire the place anyway, but blowing it up was a lot more spectacular and caused a lot more chaos. After tying up the hostler, he had dragged the old-timer a good long distance away from the barn so he'd be safe, then opened all the stalls and led the horses out as well. It had taken time to do all that without alerting any of McKinney's men that something was going on, but the kid had learned to be patient, as well as how to move as quietly as an Indian when he needed to. Once the barn was empty, he'd planned to start a fire and lure McKinney's men out of the house that way. Then he'd found the dynamite and grinned as he unrolled a long length of fuse and touched it off. After that, it had been simple to circle through the darkness to the rear of the house, overpower the guard he found there, and let himself in to look for Arturo and Masterson. He'd been waiting for the explosion on the other side of the dining room door, but something else had happened to draw McKinney and his men outside. He heard the shouting about Rose, and his forehead furrowed in a frown. He had left her tied securely a long way from the ranch headquarters. Clearly, she had gotten loose and come to warn McKinney. The kid didn't understand how, but it didn't matter. The ball was already underway. As Masterson came up out of the chair, flexing his fingers to get feeling back in them, the kid thrust a revolver into his hand. He had taken it from the guard he had knocked out.
You lie low in here, Arturo. Bat and I will deal with McKinney.
Arturo gestured toward the rifle in the kid's other hand.
I'm already bleeding again. You might as well give me that Winchester.
The kid didn't hesitate. He grinned and handed the rifle to Arturo.
Let's go. It won't take McKinney long to figure out I blew up his barn.
The three men headed for the front door. The sudden footsteps on the stairs made them stop and swing around. A couple of McKinney's hard cases were on their way down. The men stopped short at the sight of the kid and the two former prisoners. They clawed at their guns. The kid and Masterson fired at the same time, their slugs punching into the hard cases and knocking them back against the stairs. The brief, one-sided gunfight had delayed them only a few seconds. They headed for the door again and burst onto the porch. The barn was fully engulfed in flames, casting a hellish red light over the ranch house and the area in front of it. McKinney and several gunmen were gathered around a horse. They had lifted Rose down from the animal, and McKinney had an arm around her to support her. She looked past his shoulder and spotted the kid.
Browning!
McKinney and his hired killers twisted around, but the kid and Masterson already had their Colts leveled. Behind them, as more gunmen came pounding around the corner of the house, Arturo lifted the rifle to his shoulder and opened fire, working the Winchester's lever, cranking off round after round despite his injury. McKinney's men were tough. They stood their ground and put up a fight, even as bullets sized into them. The kid heard several slugs whine past his head. He placed his shots coolly and carefully, knowing he probably wouldn't have time to reload. Every bullet had to count. Beside him, Bat Masterson was doing the same thing. One by one, the killers crumpled. As his men fell, McKinney dashed to the side, dragging Rose with him. He emptied the gun in his hand to cover his retreat. The kid saw them flee.
I'm going after McKinney!
He bounded off the porch before anyone could stop him and ran toward the corner of the house where McKinney and Rose had disappeared. As the kid hurried after his quarry, he had a chance to thumb fresh cartridges into his gun after all. He stopped at the corner of the house and pressed his back against the wall rather than rush blindly around it.
Browning! Brown, you hear me? I know what happened to your wife. You gonna stand by and let another woman die?
Help me! He's really gonna kill me!
The kid didn't believe that for a second. They were trying to trick him again. Oh. It could still be a trick, the kid told himself. But it had sure sounded like McKinney had shot her.
Conrad!
She stumbled into view, blood welling from her mouth and soaking her shirt where she had both hands pressed to her midsection. The kid's eyes widened in horror. He realized a split second later that McKinney was behind her, holding her up and shoving her along. The rancher thrust his gun under Rose's arm and opened fire. The kid threw himself forward as bullets ripped through the air just above him. The light from the blazing barn was uncertain, but he could see one of McKinney's legs. He fired, drilling a slug through the rancher's thigh. McKinney twisted around. The shock of being shot caused him to let go of Rose. As she toppled limply away from him, McKinney tried to line his sights on the kid, but the kid was faster. All three bullets smashed into McKinney's chest and drove the man backward in a macabre, jittering dance. McKinney dropped his gun and fell, landing on his back with his arms and legs flung out. Then he went limp as death claimed him. The kid scrambled up and ran to Rose's side. He rolled her onto her back. He was still watchful for tricks, but she was beyond that. Life was fading rapidly from her eyes.
I don't like to...
The kid had a pretty good idea of what she'd been trying to say. She didn't like to leave a job undone. For once, she had failed. Kid Morgan was still alive.
Sir?
The kid straightened and turned around. He saw Arturo and Masterson standing there with their guns in their hands.
McKinney's men who are still alive have scattered. They're liable to come back, so it might be a good idea to find some horses and get out of here while we can.
I know where there are horses.
Arturo looked past him at the bodies of Rose and McKinney.
She didn't do her job this time, did she?
No, she didn't. And McKinney lost the last hand. Again.
Masterson stood next to the new buckboard and grinned up at Arturo.
I wouldn't have thought it, amigo, but you turned out to be a hell of a fighting man.
High praise indeed, coming from the famous Bat Masterson. But it would be perfectly fine with me if I never again have to engage in any of these ruckuses.
I wouldn't count on that happening. Not as long as you're traveling with Conrad Browning.
Conrad, dressed in his usual black suit, black hat, boots, and string tie, finished tying his horse to the back of the buckboard. He would be handling the team until Arturo's arm healed up, a process that had been unavoidably delayed by the battle at the Double Star Ranch House. Denver was still buzzing about what had happened out there several nights earlier. The official theory was that rustlers had raided the ranch. Most of the members of McKinney's crew who had survived had taken off for greener pastures since he was no longer alive to pay them. Conrad had a pretty good idea they had run off most of the Double Star stock in the process, figuring that at least they would get something out of the deal that way. The few who were still there weren't saying much. None of them wanted to implicate themselves in McKinney's murderous schemes. The presence of Rose Sullivan's body was a mystery. Most folks figured she was McKinney's lady friend who'd had the bad luck to be at the ranch when it was attacked. Nothing tied Conrad, Arturo, or Masterson to the incident, and they were going to leave it that way. Ellery Hudson knew the truth, of course, but the lawyer wouldn't say anything. Conrad was his client, after all, so he was honor-bound to keep silent. Conrad climbed up the buckboard seat beside Arturo.
You're still heading for San Francisco?
With stops to search along the way. There's still no proof Pamela took the kids with her all the way to the coast. She left here with them, but that's all we know.
There's a lot of country between here and there. I could come along and help you look.
You've got a wife and a good life here, Bat. You don't need to give that up. Besides, you said you wanted to try your hand at journalism. Maybe someday you'll write about what happened.
I don't think so. I believe we'll just let this little scrape go unreported. What would be the point in it?
That's true. Nothing was really settled, was it? I still didn't find my children.
It's only a matter of time, my friend. Only a matter of time.
Conrad and Arturo lifted hands in farewell, and Conrad got the team moving. The buckboard rolled away, leaving Bat Masterson behind them.
He's right, you know. You'll find them, little Frank and Vivian. They're out there somewhere. And they may not know it, but they're just waiting for their father to find them.
Conrad smiled. The hopeful words comforted him. But he thought about everything Pamela Tarleton had had waiting for him so far. Every bit of treachery and danger. And dark shadows shifted in his eyes. The Loner, Book 9, Killer Poker, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011 by J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Publishing copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Yasmin Toison, Tim Getman, Gary Tells, Jeff Allen, Karen Novak, Thomas Penny, Bradley Smith, Tim Carlin, Evan Casey, Christopher Graybill, Lily Beacon, Alexander Strain, Patrick Bussink, Scott McCormick, Thomas Keegan, Nanette Savard, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, Daniel Sontag, Christopher Sheeran, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Mr. Cotton.
Oh, it's a bullseye. They changed my name to Target. You call me Target.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens.
Holy cats, that blonde walked in. And I plumb stopped whatever I was doing right then and there. And I went weak at the knees.
Here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna write me a deed that says that Armand Argo or his heirs owns the Fat Tuesday. Then you're gonna write the same thing for every other claim the Scruples took over.
He'd kill me!
Then get out of town or start writing now. Because if you don't, you won't have any fingers left. And that's just the beginning of the part you'll lose.
How you doing, big fella?
Why are you here?
To see you, Cotton. I couldn't get you out of my head.
People must learn to abide by their agreements. Poor dear decided not to fulfill her obligations. Just like you.
So what? I quit you. You son of a...
Get off, Arnold.
I'll kettle myself if you're too chicken.
Well, it ain't a matter of chicken. It's getting it right. You can't go making mistakes in the killing business.
Well, I wouldn't mind a mistake or two if I get to keep my gold mine.
That's the last time you pull one on me!
There's something you should know. Billy Blue was dragged into the alley behind the mint and killed. There's not much we can do against an army of killers except lay low for the moment.
He offered me a deal. My life if I snitch on you, death if I don't, torture and death if I tell you about it.
Cotton Pickens, Book 2, Six Ways from Sunday.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.